morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. I want to go through a couple of things. I don't think we have any work session in the sense of possible introduction of committee measures. Is that correct?
We do not, no.
So with that, I want to go ahead and make an announcement. We are on a very tight schedule today. I've decided that we're not going to try to work House Bill 2700 for a work session today because we have four other bills that we want to take testimony on. So if you're here on 2700, it will be rolled over till tomorrow. All right.
Can we do that?
Yeah, we can.
Oh, we can roll it over.
I'm rolling it over.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Let me just say that one more time. House Bill 2700 is being rolled over till Thursday. That's tomorrow, which will be February...
Hi, everybody.
Whatever date that is.
19.
I guess nobody really cares about it anymore.
Well, that's a way to clear
while we clear the room. Thank you all for coming. We'll see you tomorrow. All right, what we're going to do is we have four bills today, and it looks like we can probably break them up in some scenario. So I'm think at this point, based on, let's just look. Based on the sign-up, we're going to go ahead and open up public hearings on Senate Bill 356 as well as Senate Bill 357. Jeff?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, Senate Bill 356 relates to driving under the influence of intoxicants. The bill modifies the sentence that the court is required to impose when certain persons are convicted of felony driving under the influence of intoxicants. Specifically, the bill authorizes the court to order a person to wear a continuous alcohol monitoring device in lieu of a mandatory minimum 90-day incarceration if that person is participating in a treatment court. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. Senate Bill 357 also relates to felony driving under the influence of intoxicants and also allows the court to suspend the mandatory minimum 90-day incarceration if the defendant is participating in a treatment court and wearing an alcohol monitoring device. Senate Bill 357, however, also requires that both the court set eligibility criteria for the suspension of incarceration and that the defendant meet that eligibility criteria. And it additionally requires the court to set procedures for data collection. It also declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
All right. So now we know what we're going to be talking about. I have, let's see, I'm looking, okay, so I guess Judge Judy
Matarazzo.
If you'll please come forward. Gil Meyer, why don't you go ahead and come forward as well. And that will be our opening panel. I have on deck on the opposition Kevin Mannix, Doug Harperode, and Josh Marquis. So besides those three that have listed, is there anyone else who wants to be giving testimony on Senate Bill 356 or 357 on either side or position? All right. Y'all go ahead and get started. Your Honor, are you going to start us off?
Sure. Good morning. My name's Judy Matarazzo, and I'm a judge in Multnomah County, and I supervise the DUII Intensive Supervision Program, which is known as the DIS program. It's been around for about 18 years, and we've been collecting statistics for about 17 years. As you know, ballot measure 73 required a judge to sentence someone to 90 days incarceration. In Multnomah County, our program is a three-year probation versus an 18-month or a 24-month probation, which you would likely get if you were not in our program. The program requires at least 90 days of electronic monitoring, supervised probation, and what I mean by supervised is we are very much engaged with the people who are in our court. They may not own a car. They must participate for all 3 years in a UA program that's completely random and supervised. They must have a minimum of a year treatment versus the typical 90-day treatment. It works. Since 1998, 82% of the people who graduate have not been convicted of another DUII. So the program works. The effect the ballot measure had on the program is as follows. If someone is going to be required to serve 90 days, their legal counsel is saying to them, take the 18-month probation. You'll be done with treatment in 90 days. Nobody's going to bug you from there on in as long as you stay clean. There just isn't much choice for those people. What I'm going to suggest to you is, at least in Multnomah County, which quite frankly is the county I'm most concerned about, the DIS program works, and it works well. If somebody doesn't make it through the program, and 25% of the people who start it are revoked, they know from the get-go that they will get the max sentence. So on a misdemeanor, they're going to serve a year versus the 90 days they would get if I sentenced them right from the get-go. So they're going to serve a year if they don't make it. And if it's a felony, they're going to serve the top of the grid block. So in other words, people who don't make it and cannot deal with our oversight are going to serve more time than what we're required to give them under the ballot measure for a felony. And on a Dewey misdemeanor, they're going to serve the full year. I'm happy to answer any questions. I will tell you that Multnomah County is the county that I am concerned with because we are the largest Dewey court. There are four in the state. One is a municipal, so it doesn't deal with ballot measures at all. They only have misdemeanors. And the other three generally have less than, the other two, have generally less than 25 people in them. So Multnomah County is the county that this affects most. And I'm happy to answer any questions about how it works. In reality, I'm hopeful that we can find a solution that will actually protect the people of Oregon more than what they intended to do with the ballot measure 73, which is 90 days incarceration. National statistics will tell you that people recidivate, and we deal with the high-risk offenders. These are people who have already shown that they're likely to drink and drive. So with those high-risk offenders, 90 days is simply going to keep them out of the public's way for 90 days. It's not going to deal with the underlying issues of addiction and get them off the streets permanently. And by the way, this is John Dieter. He is the executive director of the DIS program, and he probably has more facts and figures at his fingertips than I do. So he's also here to answer any questions that you might have as to how this bill would affect at least Multnomah County.
All right. And John, did you want to give any testimony or just here for Q&A?
I'm just here for Q&A and to support.
All right.
Yes,
Gail?
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Poznanski, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, we fully support Senate Bill 356 and 357. We know it poses a quandary for the committee and others, but if it were so simple to promote public safety by simply imposing mandatory minimums, it would be simple. And it's not simple. Changing humans' addictive behaviors is a hands-on business. And you can lock them up for 90 days, but they're going to come out and they're going to be the same person coming out. Very frequently, sometimes they're at a higher risk when they come out. The process of actually doing wraparound services with those short, swift sanctions and the intensive supervision and the rigor and the demand, it takes time, it takes process, and it takes hands-on work, and that's what the DIS program does. And I have had my members say that this is like treatment court on steroids. This is boot camp. You don't sign up for this unless you're really ready to get through it. 90 days looks like a walk in the park compared to what is going to be required of you by and through the DIS program. So this is, in many realities, much more rigorous. It definitely is much more effective in promoting public safety than the alternative, and we highly encourage your vote.
All right, thank you. Questions? Okay, thank you all very much. Our next panel is Kevin Mannix, Doug Harkerode, and Josh Marquis. Gentlemen, who would like to be the first? Josh?
Chair Poznanski, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me. My name is Josh Marquis. I've been the district attorney of Clatsop County for 22 years. I've been prosecuting DUI cases for over 30. I've probably personally tried over 200 of them. I'm speaking not only on my own behalf, on behalf of the DA's Association. I think it's important to remember that voters have only three times in the last 30 or 40 years gotten themselves involved in sentencing. One was the death penalty, which they voted for in 77 and 84, because jurors make the decision on the death penalty. The other was Measure 11, which was passed in 1994. And the third was Measure 73. OCDLA at the time, the then-president, Rob Roscio, wrote that Measure 73 was a red herring, that it would it's a red herring because, practically speaking, no one convicted of the felony will get 90 days. They will get 13 to 14 months in prison. Well, they don't. If we're lucky, they get 90 days. And in many, many jurisdictions, including mine, they don't do 90 days. They get sentenced to 90 days, and then all of it but 10 days are suspended to go on home monitoring. I'd like to be put on 80 days of home monitoring so that I can just sit on the couch, watch HBO, and, you know, eat ice cream. That's not therapeutic. It doesn't really help anybody. There was a court decision. I hate to bring it up because Judge Matazzaro was overturned, but that happens to good judges all the time. In a decision called State versus Urey that was handed down on New Year's of 2014. And State versus Urey basically said, with, interestingly, Judge DeMunis sitting as the head of the panel, that the voter's pamphlet, this is how he ends the five-page opinion, saying 90 days means 90 days. That's what the voters meant. He said, the voter's pamphlet demonstrates that the voters who enacted Measure 73 understood that if the measure, if passed, would require a defendant convicted of felony DUII to serve 90 days in jail. And since your time is brief, I just want to point out that when we say third Dewey within 10 years, we actually mean you're fourth within 10 years, because every 15 years you're allowed a diversion. So we're talking about people, generally drug courts, of which we have three in my county, are designed to deal with people who have addictive behavior, and it's their addiction to a substance that you're treating. And then in the hopes of that, any ensuing criminality will be reduced. Now, drug courts usually distinguish between that and people who have criminal behavior who also happen to incidentally abuse substances. Those people are not good candidates. Let me go off the boards a little bit and say that these bills, one of the problems with them, and they've been offered up in previous sessions, and I think Senator Brzezinski probably held a hearing like this 2 years ago. I think it was Senate Bill 69, if I'm not mistaken, is that as I understand it, the Multnomah County DA is neutral on this bill. And as the judge says, the Multnomah County has a really vigorous program. If, in fact, you're disposed to do this, I would suggest that you actually make it and say, except for Multnomah County's court. Because in fairness to Multnomah County, they have a very rigorous program. They're well-funded. And as the judge says, if people screw up on it, they get a year in prison. I can tell you what happens. Unfortunately, my county has a much higher than average DUII rate. And I'm in court literally every day. I'm not from that big a DA's office that I just sit in my office. And it's not uncommon for people to have 7, 8, 9 Deweys, and they're not even felonies because they've titrated them over a 25-year period. Clearly, there are people. Alcohol is one of the hardest, most addictive drugs, one of the most difficult to overcome. Frankly, we don't punish people for alcoholism. We punish them for driving and putting you and me and everybody else at tremendous risk. And if you were to ask the public, which we did in 2010, what do you think ought to happen after your third conviction within 10 years? Frankly, 90 days, I think, is the least of it. Part of the problem in both 356 and 357 are those parts on lines 18 of 356, which says, I'm sorry, in line 19, says, when a person convicted of a C felony is participating in a drug court program under ORS 3.450, if you look at 3.450, it describes drug treatment programs as a program where individuals are before the court to obtain treatment for substance abuse and a local drug team. It doesn't have any of the strictures. And I'll be very blunt, having, again, prosecuted in about 20 counties in the state. There are places where either because of the judge's beliefs, this is also a crime, by the way, that cuts across all socioeconomic lines. So there was a high-ranking public official in my county who will go unnamed who had been arrested three times in a 12-year period for DUI, got two diversions and a conviction. So we have an epidemic problem both in Oregon and particularly in Clatsop County. I don't think 90 days is unreasonable. If you want to do a carve-out for Multnomah County, then do a carve-out for Multnomah County. But also be aware that the voters did speak, and they spoke clearly, and we have the unusual additional fact of State versus Irie, in which the Court of Appeals and Judge DeMunis, who I think we all regard very highly, made it clear that it really means what it means. So I'd be happy to answer questions. I believe Mr. Mannix is the drafter of Measure 73, which passed, I think, by 61% of the vote in 2010.
So we'll take testimony before we go to questions. Kevin, are you going next or Doug?
I'll go ahead. Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Kevin Mannix. I'm a Salem attorney, a former member of the House, and a former member of the Senate. I am the author of Measure 73, and I'm the president of the Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance. We come to you today to, first of all, speak in favor of all of the intervention programs that anybody would want to put together to deal with impaired driving. And please understand that over the years, we've had many debates in this building in regard to impaired driving and how you best address it. Diversion was the original answer. The first time someone is stopped and found to be driving impaired, we have a diversion program. We don't even run them through a conviction. We give them an opportunity to clean up their act. We don't touch that in Measure 73. Then within the next 10 years, you can be convicted after a diversion on a second event. We have some intervention. Then you can again be convicted for a third event, and we have some intervention. When I say some, it varies on the capability of the judicial process to bring someone to reality. What Measure 73 said was, for God's sake, someone's been stopped for the fourth time, and how many times did they drive impaired to be stopped four times? And they've been previously put through a diversion program or given that opportunity. They've had one conviction. They've had a second conviction. This is their third conviction within 10 years. Isn't it about time to have some accountability? And this didn't have to do with cleaning up somebody who is impaired. There are many other ways you can address that. This had to do with saying, we are going to hold you accountable for your dangerous acts, which endanger the public, and now we're going to send you to jail for at least 90 days. And the interesting thing to me on the campaign trail was so many people said, why is it only 90 days? This is the fourth time in 10 years. Why isn't it 2 years? I said, well, we're trying to be reasonable. It's a sanction that's affordable and is real, and we believed at the time would actually be imposed as to the actual 90 days. Now, none of this prevents Multnomah County from moving up its intervention programs and intervening earlier in this cycle. They can intervene better on that first conviction. They can intervene better on the second conviction. Instead, they're saying, let's weaken the intervention on the third conviction so that it will fit in with our program. I'm saying, no, why don't you fit your program in with the reality of what happens under the current statute? You can do it. Please do it. We don't want the person to get to the fourth event. Intervene sooner, intervene better, great. Nothing in the law today prevents them from doing that. Instead, they're saying, give us a break. We want to plan our program to carry out on this fourth event. I won't say fourth conviction, it's a third conviction. And our response is, please, continue to do what you do, but do it sooner. Why do they get to this fourth time around? One correction, the actual final tally on Measure 73 was a 57% yes vote, but that's a pretty dramatic yes vote by the voters. The totality of all of this is that Measure 73 was not created out of nothing. It came after 10 years of going to the legislature about enhancing the penalty, and I'll use that word, for repeat impaired driving. Publicly, we say drunken driving. We know it's broader. It's impaired driving. And finally, some of us said, we're going to put some steel in the spine on the accountability side, but we did nothing to undermine the opportunities for more proactive intervention earlier. In fact, we hope that this fourth time around sanction will encourage earlier intervention so that people are not out there driving impaired and harming the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Doug?
Chair, Chair Prasansky, members of the committee, my name is Doug Harkelrod. I'm the part-time executive director for the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I'm the part-time senior policy advisor for the Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance. I come to you today as the retired Lane County District Attorney, where I spent 23-plus years as the DA, and with 10 years in the office as an assistant. I'm an alternatives guy. We created the second oldest drug court in Lane County for the state of Oregon. Judge Larson was the spear on that. We created a psychiatric hospital attached to our jail that was open for 19 years, where we moved people through there, and rather than charging them with relatively low-level crimes, we got them back on their drugs, medications, and got them out of the system. We created a diversion program for misdemeanors and some felonies that was a correspondence course. It sounds goofy, but you know what? We followed all of those individuals, and they seemed to do very well and get out of the criminal justice system. That's enough about that background, although I could talk a lot more for a long time about that. Senator Prasansky knows a lot about all of those things, participated in the past on some of them. What I'm here today to do is to tell you that I'm a crime victim. In 1987, my 5-year-old son and myself, on a Sunday afternoon at 4:30, were rear-ended by an intoxicated driver. She blew a 1-2 or a 1-4, I forget the exact detail of the blow. She had THC in her system, and my son and I were lucky. We were sent across a 4-lane highway. Fortunately, there was nobody oncoming. We went 450 feet about, according to the police report, before I finally got this old pickup stopped in front of a tree. So I'm a victim of a drunk driver. My son is a victim, and I'm pleased to say we're the lucky victims, because I only hurt for about a year. I'm a believer in whiplash, and physical therapy helped that. My son had a concussion. And let me just say that there needs to come a time when a drunk driver gets a wake-up call in jail. And I supported Measure 73 because, as Mr. Mannix eloquently said, it's not the first time, second time, third time. It's usually the fourth time. And frankly, there needs to be a punishment component associated with those people who are repeat intoxicated drivers. And so the victims deserve that 90 days. The public said we should do 90 days as a mandatory minimum, and frankly, we ought to do it. The treatment is great. I love it. Earlier on. I'm done.
Questions? I've got a couple. I guess there's a couple of things that didn't seem to come out. Josh, you stated this to where the citizens were involved in different crime measures. I didn't hear anything about Measure 10 or Measure 17 that Kevin put together. We had in 1994 with Measure 11. So Measure 10 is the one that I guess I wanted to focus on, because my understanding, and Kevin, since you're the author of that, was there could be a time where you felt that the legislature should, in fact, take in consideration what might have changed, and that maybe we should change and alter the length of a sentence that was prescribed by the voters, but with a supermajority required vote. I'm assuming you still support that.
Would you like me to respond, Mr. Chairman?
That'd be great.
Well, yes. Measure 10 was deliberately done as a separate constitutional amendment that said when a criminal sentence is established by a vote of the people, it would require a two-thirds vote of the House and a two-thirds vote of the Senate to reduce the sentence. At the time when we were doing Measure 11, some proponents had said, well, Kevin, you should put this in the Constitution so it's locked in and it can't be changed. And my response was, no, Measure 11 will be statutory, but we will have an insurance policy. Measure 10 will require that there be real consensus about backing away from a sanction established by a vote of the people. And actually, I recall at least twice since 1994 that the legislature has passed legislation which has reduced Measure 11 sanctions by consensus, where there was a two-thirds vote of the House and Senate, and the modification was implemented. And I still stand by that principle. If, with information presented, with time to evaluate, looking at our experiences, we can modify things as appropriate by consensus.
Senator Brzezinski, if I may, I think you raise a good point. But I, what I forgot to mention is, and since Kevin's sitting here, this might be difficult, but 7 years ago, there was another mandatory minimum, Measure 61, which you and I and the DAs opposed. And voters made a considered decision to vote for Measure 57 that didn't have. So my point is that I don't think that the public just automatically knee-jerk votes for every mandatory minimum that comes along. I think they're fairly picky about what they approve.
I'm not saying there are or aren't, but to me, what I hear, I guess this is a follow-up, is to evidence-based programs and practices that we have established in this state, that we basically are going to monitor these various programs, make certain they are actually delivering what we think they should, and if they're not, we get rid of them and we move on to something else. The HOPE Project program, which we've had the judge come in from Hawaii and walk us through a lot of this. What I hear about this DISP program and the evidence based is showing it works.
Well, then my suggestion would be, if I mean, that program is virtually unique. I can tell you that the resources rarely exist outside Multnomah County, that if you really want to do this and you really think that program has all the things it takes, and if somebody else wants to do it, they have to do all the things they do, then change this bill so it says the program in Multnomah County with all the things that it has now. Because I can assure you what will happen in far-flung parts of the state where there are problems, like in my county where we don't have jail space, and judges are understandably doing that, that they're going to simply say, okay, we're going to call this a drug court program because, you know, we're being pressured by the sheriff and the county commissioners and everybody else, and you're going to have essentially eroding truth in sentencing. Except in this case, we're talking not about 20 or 70 or 90 or 100 months in prison, we're talking about 90 days in jail, which in many times is a poor person's detox, as sad as that may be.
Right. We're going to move on to the other bills, but I guess before we do, Kevin, I know that you've sat here and talked about maybe this intervention should be earlier. Do you have a position if this bill was actually limited to Multnomah County under the program they have and call it a pilot program, which the legislature has done multiple times. Do you have a position as to where you would be on that?
Yes.
And that position is?
We would be opposed simply on the proposition that the Multnomah County program ought to be applied earlier in the process, and we should not wait until the fourth time. They should be applying this process much earlier. And again, the fourth time someone's caught is probably the 40th or more times that they've actually been driving impaired.
Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we know, and maybe bringing back the folks from Multnomah County, is it never applied before the fourth?
I'm sure it is.
The first conviction. So someone can come into our program, and we certainly have people who are there after their first conviction. It is a voluntary program, and it is self-paid.
So I think, gentlemen, thank you very much. If you all step back, Your Honor, if you'll come up and just repeat what you just said and make certain it's on the record, and then we're moving on to the other two.
The DISP program is a voluntary program, and it is available to anyone after their first conviction. We do, in fact, have people who are in the program who have had one conviction, two conviction, and 12 convictions, just not in 10 years, so ballot measure 73 doesn't apply to them. I want to be really clear. I have absolutely no objection to 90 days jail if it works. But for most people, because we are a self-pay program, people need to be employed and have insurance. You take them out of the employment for 90 days, they no longer have insurance, they no longer have housing in many cases, and they can't participate. So the program is not just available after a fourth conviction. It is available to anyone after a first conviction. And there are some who participate at that level, and some, quite frankly, turn us down after the first conviction and come back a year later having suffered their second conviction, and then they're ready for treatment. So there isn't any prescription that says you can only participate at a certain point. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you.
Your Honor, thank you very much. We'll close the public hearings on Senate Bill 356 and 357. I'm going to go ahead and open up public hearings on Senate Bill 397 and 398.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, Senate Bill 397 also relates to driving under the influence of intoxicants. The bill increases the fees for a DUII screening interview and diagnostic assessment for DUII from $150 to $275. Senate Bill 398 also includes a fee increase for the same amount and same reasons. However, Senate Bill 398 relates to ignition interlock devices. The bill requires the provider of the ignition interlock device to notify the court of any negative report downloaded within 7 business days. It requires the provider to download all reports recorded on the device each time they have access to it. Additionally, Senate Bill 398 permits the court to mandate installation of an ignition interlock device with a camera or similar technology if the court does not terminate a defendant's diversion agreement following the receipt of a negative report.
All right, thank you. Representative Barnhart, I know you're here, and I wanted to know if you want to go ahead for us to take your testimony now, if you'll come on up, and then I'll call up the other panel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from House District 11. I'm also the president of the Board of Addiction Education Services in Eugene, which includes services provided in Lane, Lynn, and Douglas counties, and at various times has also provided addiction treatment services in other places. I've been a member of the board and president most of the time since the mid-1980s, so it's a project that I'm very, very familiar with, although I've never actually worked in the agency. I want to talk this morning only about the provision having to do with the increase in the ADIS fees that both of these bills refer to. I don't have an opinion about the interlock device issue. The most important thing when you're dealing with addiction treatment, when you're dealing with people who have been charged with a crime involving addiction difficulties or use, is to get them into a diagnostic process and into treatment quickly, because you have much better outcomes when you do it right away rather than waiting around. This ADIS program has turned out to have a great to be very problematic. It was instituted originally in Colorado. The Coloradans only used it for a couple of years and then abandoned it as unworkable. We should do the same. We've had it for a number of years now. Frankly, it doesn't provide a useful service, and what it does do is significant for many people. It significantly delays the beginning of treatment. The biggest problem with this program is that the fee itself becomes a barrier to treatment. The current $150 fee means that a number of people do not get into a diversion program or treatment at all when they desperately need to be in that kind of a program. The bill, which would raise that fee, very likely will result in an increase in the numbers. The legislature over the last several sessions has done things that actually make it easier for people to deal with treatment. We've changed the rules around insurance, for example, so that despite the fact that a person comes to the attention of a treatment organization as a result of a driving under the influence charge, their insurance would still cover the treatment. It does not cover these fees. So that's an important problem. Other problems with the ADIS system is that process in most places includes the filling out of a behavioral checklist, which in fact could be filled out by anybody with the information about the events and about the person who they have before them. Most ADISs do not screen for which program would work best for this particular client, which I think is part of the purpose of the program in the first place. Many of the ADISs are actually part-time and do other work and do not have the basic qualifications to do these kinds of evaluations. In the agency that I'm associated with, most of the work that ADISs are supposed to do is actually done after the referral by the treatment provider for the purpose of figuring out whether you want a person in an education program for someone who got caught up once in a bad situation, or whether you want them in an addiction treatment program for somebody who actually has or is likely to have an addiction to alcohol or some other substance. And that's one of the things that the ADIS is supposed to be helpful for. If you intend to go ahead with a bill like this one, my recommendation would be that you include a requirement that for those who are unable to pay, that there be a process for free delivery of this service so that we can get people into treatment very quickly, that additional requirements be added to the statute for training for ADIS evaluators, and that the evaluations be done quickly. I believe that the best approach would be simply to abolish this program and go to a program that that involves a more direct referral process without the system in place that doesn't actually accomplish any useful purpose in most cases. I'm not saying that all ADISes are doing the things I'm describing. I'm simply saying it's a big issue, a big problem around the state. Some are doing just fine. But in any case, in all cases, for people who are unable to pay that ADIS fee, we defeat the whole object of having this program in the first place. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for the representative? Bill, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. I have three other people that had signed up to give testimony on these two bills. I'm not sure if it's Brian or Brian. Sonsoni, Gail Myers, and Teresa Douglas. Why don't the three of you please come forward? And while they're coming forward, I'm going to ask, as I did on the last set of bills, is there anyone here that's not on the list that wanted to give testimony today on 397 or 398? We've got 20 minutes. Who wants to start?
I guess I'll go ahead. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Teresa Douglas. I'm an alcohol and drug evaluation specialist. I have been providing that service to the Clackamas County Courts for the last 30 years. I first want to address the testimony that you just heard. I will say that there are a lot of evaluators around the state that take their job seriously. I think that there is room for improvement. Some of that comes from how the courts are run and who is running the evaluation process. The judges have a lot of say on what we do. We have agreements directly with the courts as to how we run the diversion program and do our jobs. So I think there is room for improvement, but we are essential in the system because there is no one else to monitor these cases. So we are the ones that are the conduit between the court and the client, the interlock company, and the public. And I think our services are essential to the system. With regard to Senate Bill 397 and 398, I have been supervising and monitoring the interlock device since it went into effect in 2012. I found it to be a very beneficial tool in our system of trying to keep people from repeat drinking and driving. Part of the diversion program has been, since the inception, that people are not allowed to operate a vehicle with alcohol or intoxicants in their body. This is another tool that has allowed us to monitor their compliance with that. And we report that to the court when we do have violations. However, the issue has been that the interlock companies only download the information every 30 to 60 days, mostly 60 days. So by the time I receive the information, it's already 60 days old, and it's hard to do an intervention at that point. But I spend a lot of time with the clients explaining the interlock, what they need to do, how to comply with it. When I get a violation, I follow up with the treatment program and let them know if there's been a violation and find out if there's been any urine testing done around that violation. I report those to the court and follow up. When people are done with treatment and they go out and they drink and drive or try to use the interlock and they violate that, I send them back to treatment. They get a reassessment. And so we are trying to make an intervention, and it would be beneficial to all of us if that information was provided to us in a timely manner so that we could do an intervention properly. Thank you, and we appreciate your support on this, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
All right, who's next, Brian? Or?
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Cinsoni. If you perceive any nervousness for me this morning, it's my first time ever testifying in front of the legislature, and exacerbated somewhat by a former student in the room as well. I'm here on behalf of ODAA. I'm also a deputy district attorney with Clackamas County, and for many years now have prosecuted DUIIs. I'm now on a felony unit that prosecutes manslaughter, so we see, you know, the worst aspects of driving under the influence, obviously, when presented with facts and circumstances involving that. Presently, I just want to point out a couple of things. The bill in its current form, speaking of 398, requires notice to the court of any IID violations or any negative reports. We would like to see that expanded or amended notification. I think presently it says that court's designee, presumably that's ADs, and Teresa Douglas would receive notice and then pass that on to our office. And actually she would initiate a show cause hearing with the court to bring somebody into court if there was a violation. We would like to see the bill expanded to include notification to individual prosecutors' offices that have that originally prosecuted the individual for the DUII, and whether they're on diversion or whether it's for a conviction, so that in the event the resources aren't there, Teresa Douglas does a fantastic job, but in some counties that may be more difficult and adds another layer, we would like the ability to know if an offender has violated and to initiate a show cause hearing if we believe it is necessary. Presently, we aren't made aware, and as I mentioned, we often don't even hear of violations if they occur. If it takes Teresa 30 to 60 days to learn, it could take even longer for the court to be notified or for our office to be notified, and obviously interventions at that point are long since passed. Secondly, Section 3 of Senate Bill 398, as it's currently written, we believe can be eliminated because the OARs already have a provision for cameras to be put onto the IIDs beginning June 1st of this year, and so we don't feel that that section is necessary. And then it came to my attention this morning, and I might not relay the exact issue. I'm here helping out Dina Ryerson, who you probably well know, is very involved in these matters. She pointed out to me on the phone that Section 4 of the bill, currently subsection 12 of that is being eliminated, and we believe that might be a Scrivener's error, in that that's the whole point of this bill, is to provide notice when there is a violation on diversion. But as she was pointing out to me, presently we're taking out when a person is required to install an ignition interlock device under subsection 2 or 3. Subsection 3 deals with convictions. Subsection 2 deals with diversion. So we'd ask that that section be put back in, as that's the whole point of the bill. But subsection 3 would not need to be in there, as that deals with convictions, not diversion, as the bill is intended.
Brian, yes. I'm going to start losing members really quick. So if you could summarize.
Yeah, and that's all I had. So I thank you.
See if there's any questions. Gail, you may be coming back. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Well, I guess I have a question for you. Are we going to have more information on this at a later day, or are you just going to be moving something? Okay.
Yeah, we'll be taking more time. All right, so those who need to or want to leave now, feel free to leave now. Gail, if you want to put something on the record while we have people here, you can do that, or we can just set this over for another day.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd prefer to just make my comments on another day.
All righty. So we're going to go ahead and take these matters. We're going to roll them over, or should we just put them on for tomorrow? Schedule another day. All right, so we're going to schedule another day sometime in the future. We're not going to roll them over tomorrow because we got a pretty busy day tomorrow. So with that, that concludes our public hearings for Senate Bill 397, 398 for today. We will repost them for public hearings, which means we'll take additional testimony at that time if necessary. And the same thing I believe we may be doing on the other two bills, because we did rush through this. So with that, we're adjourned for the day, and we'll be back tomorrow on, I believe, at 8:30.
Thank you, Mr.
On, I believe, at 8:30.